Good morning. It is Thursday, October 31st, 10 a.m. Welcome to the weekly Emunah teleconference. This is Henry Harris. Today, we will be revisiting a favorite of mine in honor of this week's portion of Noach, in which we learn at the very outset of the portion about the idea that the main children that a person has in this world are his choices. We'll be looking at the parallel notion of the birth of a new self, how the birth is a key metaphor. So that's the topic that we'll be looking at today. But right now we're going to do our simple review. And what is the basic idea here? We're learning about the notion of Emunah. We're looking in particular to understand, I want to just, by the way, both for those who are on the call right now as well as those listening to the recording, point out that I've been having some technical difficulties with, I believe it's my computer, it could be the program, in which case there are times where the program just drops. It could be I'm going to have to go back to a regular phone format rather than using my internet on the computer. But nonetheless, if it does drop, know that I'm going to try and get back on so you can sit tight, but it might happen. Okay, so the review that we're looking at this.
Okay, well, that was interesting. Literally, just after I mentioned that I've been experiencing difficulties, it dropped, and so I called back on the phone. So here I am. Can I just get a quick confirmation? Can you hear me if you're on the call? Can you just confirm
yes.
You're on?
Yes, I can
Good.
Hear you.
Good. Okay, great. Yeah. Beautiful. Wonderful. All right, let's keep going. So we are... We're doing the basic overview of what this call is about. This call, I actually had the opportunity to discuss this morning with someone. And so here's what I shared, that we're looking at the notion, the nature of our psychological experience, and we're seeing how Emunah informs us about our psychological experience. So what we're understanding is that we're having a psychological experience moment to moment, and we're looking at really the spiritual underpinning of that psychological experience. In other words, it's not the case that our psychological experience is coming from the circumstances and the people and the places and the things in our life in a direct sense. We don't have a direct experience of those things simply because they do not possess the power to shape or cause anything inside of us or anything anywhere. We are looking at an understanding that we're having a direct kind of divine download. You know, there's like a divine live feed into our heart with new thoughts. Now, when I say thought, obviously I'm not referring to the concept of the things that we're necessarily conscious of. I'm talking about divine energy. There's a spiritual energy that animates everything in this world at all times. Everything is completely and wholly dependent on God's ongoing power and sustaining of this universe, and our psychological experience is not different. And that's why we have moods. That's why we can have varied experiences of what are otherwise pretty static circumstances in our lives. There are times in our life where a certain relationship feels really unsettling and threatening, and other times where it feels like, okay, we have a certain peaceful acceptance and appreciation for the good alongside some of the challenges. That's just true in our lives, is that we are not experiencing the world directly. Not to say that there aren't events in the world, not to say that there aren't behaviors and actions, and there could be actions and behaviors that are inappropriate, that constitute damage, that constitute wrong. I'm not suggesting there is no standard or actual reality to the experiences we're having. It's just that the feeling experience that we're having isn't coming from those experiences. It's not coming from those events. And that first of all, is just true. It's just true. It's just a true understanding of the nature of the one God, the Ein Od Milvado, the notion that there really is no other power, there is no other cause in this world other than the one being behind all reality. It's just true. Now, simultaneously, it happens to be that, as we know, our Torah speaks to the just the helpfulness of Emunah. You know, the Rambam introduces his 14-volume summary of all of Jewish law and thought with the simple line that says that the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdom is to know that there is a first being, right? That the basic notion of stability, that he's saying that the foundation of all foundations, the pillar of all wisdom, is to know that there is a first being. That makes so much sense to me, that psychological well-being, that the ability to navigate our lives in a world in which we experience so many kind of moving, shifting feelings that can seem like they're coming from the outside, that lends itself to a tremendous instability, because to the degree that I associate my psychological experience with the world out there, and intuitively I know I do not control the world out there, then I'm kind of left in a struggle of sorts. You know, I'm left in a struggle to try and run or avoid or control or blame, you know, because there's just this kind of, it just feels so logical, like person A, circumstance B, event in my past C is sourcing my feelings, then I've got to change them because I don't like living with unpleasant feelings. You know, they just seem too threatening to me. Well, the implications of this is the ability to be with all kinds of feelings, the ability to be with them, knowing something more deep about them, knowing something more simple and true about them, that all feelings are basically divine energy. There's definitely something to learn from them, but the first thing to do is to start with the truth. The first thing to do is to start with the truth about our feelings, and of course the twin of this understanding is the mitzvah of not to believe in powers other than God. The first of the two commandments, two of the six constant mitzvahs: know there is a God, know that there cannot be other gods, or said in other words, not to ascribe power to things other than God. There's a tremendous potential for freedom. Now, I also want to acknowledge, as I've shared in the past, that the knowledge of this understanding, the seeing the kind of intellectual concepts and the truth of them, doesn't necessarily change our feeling state, because the truth of what we're describing is true in the sense that knowing those ideas, knowing the logic about those ideas, being able to repeat this logic to others, doesn't necessarily translate to having the power to insert that clarity into our heart. It's still the case that this basic notion is describing how everything is created, how everything works. The ability to see this for ourselves insightfully, in a way that it really does affect our consciousness, that's a gift. We're just simply describing the truth about this gift, and acknowledging that there's a value in learning about this gift. There's a value in understanding the simplicity about this gift. It's a mitzvah. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a mitzvah conversation. There's tremendous value in that. The ability to kind of integrate it, to become moved by it, that our perception, that we see insightfully that the world is being shaped, that our experience is being shaped from the inside out, that's a gift. We see it more clearly at times, we see it less clearly at times, but we can know what's true about our experience on some level at all times. And that allows us the ability to be, at least for me, it allows me the ability to be a successful servant. I get to do a good job. I get to do a job that I can do. I don't know how to do the job of getting a good feeling. I don't know how to do the job of making myself peaceful. I tried. I wasn't able to do that with any consistency, and I got discouraged. And then I discovered that it's not my job. My job is to serve, and the first place to serve is to look for the truth, to acknowledge the truth, to acknowledge what cannot be true. And lo and behold, I found that I'm, first of all, grateful for the ability to do that job. It's a very meaningful job. It's an extraordinarily meaningful thing, and it's a great accomplishment to do that, to do these mitzvahs. And lo and behold, it happens to be that I've gotten much less concerned about things that used to stress me out. It's amazing to me that Amuna in the Lo Yeh Lecha, it's impossible that a person doesn't start to see new things as a result of looking in this direction. Okay, so that's my overview, and I'm now revisiting something that I have to imagine, if I've done 70 talks so far in this weekly thing, I have to imagine I've mentioned it 30 times. So in a sense, it's a bit of a chazorah, but I just feel like in honor of Parshas Noach, I feel I have to say it. When the portion describes that Noah was a tzaddik, and then immediately it lists the names of his sons, Rashi wonders what's the continuation. Like, if you're going to tell me he's a tzaddik, then tell me his virtues. Don't tell me the names of his sons. And the answer is that Rashi brings a midrash that says that referring to his being a tzaddik and then immediately referring to his children is appropriate, because really, even though these are his sons, the main children of a person are his good actions. The main children of a person are his good actions. And that is, there's a tremendous, I mean, there's so much to be had in that metaphor that only became more visible to me with the help of this kind of inside out awareness. Do I have my people still? Are you guys on this call? Just checking in just real quick to see if I've got people on the call still. I want to make sure that I haven't lost anybody.
Still here.
Good. Okay, good. Okay. So let's remember, let's just remember the metaphor. So the main children that a person has in this world are his good choices. That means that good choices are likened to a pregnancy labor delivery experience. And that's profound, because our sages speak about the meaning of that idea. First of all, the understanding that a pregnancy is an extraordinary blessing, but it's not visible in the direct sense, right? A baby, a mommy carries a baby in its tummy, and obviously it's noticeable that she's pregnant, but it's not visible. It's not yet. It's hidden. And there is a great degree to which there is an awesome life that is right here. Like, right here in our, it's right here in our lives right now. But it's not fully visible to us. And I'm associating the idea of a new life as a new level of understanding. You know, we talk about life as being connection to God. You know, tzaddikim are called alive even after they pass. And Rishoyim, wicked people, are called dead even while they're breathing and walking around eating food, right? Because real life in our understanding is connection to, awareness of God, right? So there's this extraordinary capacity for connection that we all are carrying around with us, in the sense that we're all going through this pregnancy labor delivery process. That's the way God designed the world, is that we're going through pregnancy labor delivery, and there's a whole lot of life and a whole lot of wisdom connection that's here. It's right here. It's already here. It's not visible to us, but it's here. Our connection to the Creator is constant. It never ceases. There is huge understanding that is already, so to speak, part of us. It's just not visible to us. That's important to know. You know, that's a very valuable thing to understand. How much wisdom is already present in people, but that it's not visible to them. You know, we can get discouraged. We can start to question and lose hope about our ability to navigate a certain thing, or find ourselves gaining, how are we going to gain relief from this stress or this challenge, or how are we going to gain a path forward in this roadblock? But yet, the notion of pregnancy, that the main choices of our life are our main children are the choices in our life. The pregnancy idea, the metaphor, is that that life is already here. It's just not visible. Now, after the pregnancy matures, a woman goes into labor. A person undergoes an experience where intense contractions start, and the body starts to constrict in a way that it hurts. It's physically painful, and it's not on her. You know, think about how contractions work. Like it's, you know, you don't know when they're going to begin. You really don't. A woman just doesn't know. I mean, obviously she can go and elect for a surgery, but according to the, you know, conventional non-surgery approach, a woman really doesn't know when the labor process begins. And it starts. Then once it starts, it hurts. And it is not clear how long it's going to last. It's not clear how long the actual individual contractions are going to go, and you know, and then on the bigger picture, how long the contractions, and those contractions are painful, and they are a function of a force that's not personal. It's completely impersonal that a woman is experiencing the pain of a contraction. It has nothing to do with her. It has nothing to do with her ability to be spiritually adept or psychologically healthy. The pain of contractions affect everyone. Now, of course, our understanding about the pain of contractions can make a big difference. You know, to the degree that a woman feels, what's wrong with me? Why can't I seem to manage this contraction process better? Why can't I seem to do this, you know, get this moving and move on through it faster? You know, like there's a way in which we can, through our misunderstanding of the process, through our misunderstanding of the divine nature of the process, we can innocently but unmistakably intensify our own suffering. There is a power to our choice. There's a power to our understanding. That's why there's a power to this whole endeavor of learning about this understanding. There is a mitzvah here, and our choice to learn and engage in a mitzvah is highly consequential. So in our choice, you know, and to the degree that a person is overlooking a sincere devotion to a certain mitzvah, it can make a difference as well. So we're looking at the divine kind of impersonal quality to the contractions and acknowledging that there's pain there. And when a woman is in that pain, there's really nothing she can do in the direct sense. I mean, obviously she can, you know, again, in modern examples, you know, my wife, thank God, was able to get an epidural, and that's a good thing. But in the precise analogy of it, just in the organic kind of nature of it, there's really, where are you going to go? You know, the pain's coming. You could judge it. You could blame yourself. You could compare the pain to someone else, or you could sit with the simple, simple truth of it. This is a divine process. I'm engaging the divine. The divine is engaging me. It is completely and totally a divine experience right now. Does that mean, you know, going to our... So what I would say is that in that moment, the affirmation that this is that what about what's true would be a tremendous accomplishment. That would be a fulfillment of this of the mitzvah of Amunah. Then to know, of course, that you know, to the degree that I'm tempted to blame something out there, you know, that would be that the ability to affirm how that's not true would be a tremendous fulfillment of the mitzvah of lo yelucha. Now, I'll point out to you a fascinating thing, which I've shared in the past. The Torah says that every woman who goes through the birth process is obligated to bring what's called a chatas offering. A chatas is a transgression offering. Normally, that's associated with, like, I don't know, somebody accidentally lit a fire on Shabbos, forgetting that today was Shabbos, or he... You know, he did some other prohibited activity, not realizing what he was doing. And there's an offering to atone for the transgression. It really kind of is like, what in the world is going on with every woman who gives birth bringing a transgression offering? Like, why? Why should she bring? What did she do? She went through a challenging experience, brought a new life into the world, and now she's being told, oh, bring a chatas. And the Talmud explains that the underlying idea behind it is that built into the birth process is the natural human tendency for a woman to say, this is so painful, this is so unpleasant, I don't want to ever be with my husband again. Like, it's his fault. You know, if I weren't married, if I didn't have a relationship with him, then I wouldn't be pregnant and I wouldn't have to go through this process, and I don't like it. Now, that's a mistake because, again, as we're saying, like, the Torah is teaching us that being alive means going through the process of tests. Being alive means going through the process of a pregnancy, labor, delivery because of the extraordinary opportunity to be a channel for new divine life in the world. It's such a privilege. It's such an incredible merit and an act of service. And of course, it's highly meaningful. You know, it's extraordinarily meaningful when we're able to see that. So it's a privilege. It's a gift. It's not personal to us that we're undergoing these tests. It's the design of the way God wanted this world to run. And to know that it's also human. Every single Yoledis, every single woman giving birth goes through some kind of an internal experience where she resents the nature of life itself. She resents this kind of underlying notion of life. And so the Torah says, look, you can't not get caught in the world of form. You can't. If you're human and you're going through the test of bringing the divine into this world, being a vehicle through which the divine enters into this world, which is really what giving birth does, right? It's like there's a new baby. Where did that come from? Well, it was a divine process, but it came through the mommy. So too with new understanding. A new understanding, a new level of understanding, a new sense of connection to God's oneness is something that we can't generate. I can't generate a baby. I can't generate a new level of clarity. I can't. It doesn't work that way. No human being can generate it. But we can be loyal to the truth about how the birthing process works, loyal to the wisdom and the authority that God has to guide us in the way that he sees fit, and to be accepting of that wisdom, and simultaneously to be accepting of the universal human capacity to feel resentment toward it at times. It's just normal. It's just normal that we feel resentment toward this truth. Yeah, we lose sight of it, I should say. It's not that we are resentful of the truth itself. We're resentful of we get resentful because of how human it is to misunderstand this truth. So that's it. You know, that's to me the reminder of the metaphor, the opportunity to be in our lives, to be accepting of there being a whole quality about our lives that is, you know, really something that's not in our control, that does feel quite hard on a regular basis, and yet is a gift, and yet it's not personal, and yet is something that we can be loyal to and accepting of in a way that is an active role. It's not just a surrender on nothing, you know, punish me if you see fit. It's being a partner. It's the opportunity to be a partner with the divine at the same time that we're accepting our human, you know, our human limitations. That's my idea about, that's what I'm inspired by with the metaphor of birth. It has been so rich to me, and I'm going to pause here just to check in and see who has a thought or a comment or a question of any kind. Good morning. Anybody?
Well, I'm enjoying what you're saying, but I don't have a thought on it. I think it's
okay. Good. That's fine. No problem.
Say, like, we can't, even though we're teaching, sometimes when I'm teaching, I'm like, why am I teaching? I'm like more miserable than them. And then other times, I'm like, but it's true. You know,
right.
I always think of Sid when he used to say, if you don't have $10 in your wallet, if you only have $5 in your wallet, you can't give away 10. But at a certain level, I may not be so happy that day, but I can still teach, and somebody else can feel happier based on our conversation. So it's funny, like there is that, you know what I'm saying? Like there is that piece to it that you can feel miserable, and yes, you can still help another person find, you know, find their insight or their thought, or I don't know what the word is, but yet in a more spiritual, emotional sense, you kind of can give away 10 if you only have 5 in your wallet. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. Well, sure, because really, in my mind, the orientation that I seek is to, is to share a simple truth,
Right.
And of course, I'm gratified by the degree to which the simple truth seems to have a clear rollover into psychological well-being. But I know that the core is the interest in the simple truth, and that's something you can speak to and acknowledge unconditionally.
Right. I guess if you know that would be the equivalent of the $10, like that you could give it, because I guess that's giving the knowledge of it. You're not giving the mood. You know what I'm saying? You're not giving a feeling.
Right.
You're giving the knowledge of it, and then the feeling comes however it manifests in each person at different moments in time.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It's like a roller coaster ride.
What's that?
I said I feel sometimes like it's a roller coaster ride. You just have to hold on.
Yeah.
Going down.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone else? Would anyone else like to share a thought or a comment or a question?
So I think I have a question. So when you said the analogy of birth is basically analogies, a new understanding or new insight.
The birth itself, meaning the new baby, is likened to a new insight, you're saying?
Right, like when you say, like that gives a new meaning to the saying that the true children of a person is his good deeds. And so I'm still trying to understand what does that mean, because I feel like I've been struggling a lot lately with doing exactly what you mentioned when you said how the woman may kind of get lost in the, I'm doing this wrong, and I wish this was different, and I wish I knew how to do better. And I feel like modern psychology is so full of, this is how you should do better contractions, this is how you should do better, this is how you should acquire well-being, this is how you should, like, this and that, and it's just so much pressure and confusion.
Huh.
And here, but you're saying no, it's something else entirely, and really it's like you're just looking for a new insight. So do you mind just explaining a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, it's like, like I said, it to me what I relate to is the appreciation for the truth of it, It makes a big difference to know what's true about the contractions. This is also, in related to the birth analogy that I've mentioned on many occasions, is that if a woman really didn't know, imagine a woman being pregnant and not knowing anything about pregnancy, right, as strange as that may seem, but imagine a woman who was, at the end of her 9 months, she's pregnant, but she doesn't know how she got this way. She doesn't know about pregnancy. She doesn't know about delivery. And then she starts to undergo the contractions. What's going to happen for her? What's going to be her experience of life in those moments?
Terrifying.
Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. So she's got the physical pain of the contractions, but much more severe is going to be the deep, deep feeling of total out of control. Like I'm being ripped apart by a force that I have no understanding, what is going on, And unfortunately, that can be our experience of life, where we just feel like we're being ripped apart. I mean, now the pain of the contractions is painful, that sensation is real, but the understanding that is the possibility of seeing the kind of the impersonal nature of that pain. You know, the shoulds can fall off a little bit. You know, the shoulds don't make as much sense. All those shoulds that you're referring to that modern psychology might emphasize, like, you know, whatever they are, you know, those shoulds become a little bit less compelling in the understanding that I'm going through a birthing process. And I've done it before. It's not like I haven't, you know. It's like, you know, it's like the question that I, you know, one of the most common questions that I find, you know, myself and others asking is like, well, what do I do in this intense pain? I'm in this intense pain. What can you tell me about how to go about my life right now? Well, I'm tempted usually in that moment to say, have you ever had this intense pain before? And then the person will stop and say, yes, I have. And then I ask, did it, and what happened to it? Has it been around all the while that you had it from the time last till now? And usually they'll say, no, it ended, but I'm in it now. And then I say, well, what happened? Like, how did it stop? You know? And they, and usually, like it might dawn on the person, yeah, that is interesting. You know? It doesn't go forever. How did it stop? I don't know for sure, but I do acknowledge that it stopped. Huh. You know, was it something you did? Was it something somebody told you? You know, and maybe they'll find a way to hang it on something. You know, maybe they'll find a way to hang it on some kind of circumstance or event or things like that. But usually they're left with the realization, they're like, wow, that's interesting. I get into these dark experiences, but I don't stay there forever. What's with that? You know, how do I come out of it? You know, and then like it can give us a little bit of a window into the fact that, yeah, we, you know, that's how God wants to run his world, that we are undergoing the labor delivery experience, the tests. But the tests are, there's so many places where we've been, you know, we've done this, like we've done it. We've gone through a hard experience where something really got constricting and then it stopped and something, you know, maybe we've overlooked it. Maybe we've overlooked what we gained. And there's certainly a room for gratitude. You know, there's certainly room for noticing where and how something new showed up in our heart. You know, noticing how we had a shift in an experience of a relationship with a child or with a spouse or whomever. You know, appreciating the depth of how there's already been so many labor delivery experiences in my life, so many. And I survived them and even gained from them tremendously, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Just what you said just now about gratitude, because I was just mm-hmm. going to say, you said that, well, I can certainly relate that my life is like a nonstop sequence of these experiences, just like you described, like literally exactly. And they also, exactly like you said, all of them have end and not on my terms and I can't even pinpoint like what is it. It's almost like, well, that was decreed, just like contractions end because it was decreed, you know. But the only thing was, my question is, like, with actual children, like, you know, look, with the analogy, like, you have the kids, right? Like, you have them, right?
Yeah.
But here, yeah. I feel like, yeah, whatever it is I'm supposed to be left with, like, this insight, this bigger understanding, I feel like I keep losing it. Like, I don't retain it. Like it's almost like Hashem removes one challenge, very closely, let's say, follows another one, and I'm sort of back to square zero, you know, sort of just flailing about, you know.
Right. Interesting. And then where's the kid, you know? I went through that whole labor delivery, and where's my beautiful baby?
And you know, I just, to be fair to Hashem, I do see the baby, like I see the amazing kindness of, let's say, a certain challenge, like, let's say, lifting or resolving or getting better. And somehow yet I find that, like, instead of, like, being constantly overwhelmed with gratitude, I'm more like, oh, okay, good. This is good now. Oh, let me focus on what's not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. I know what that looks like. There's a reason why, you know, gratitude is something, you know, it's something to have in mind. You know, it's something to look for. And we're not talking, when I speak of gratitude, to me, I'm not speaking of how to get a grateful feeling, which is lovely. I love a grateful feeling. But I'm speaking about, to me, gratitude is about the truth of gratitude. To me, as I know I've shared this before, sorry for my repetition, but, you know, to me, gratitude is the simple truth that things can come from nothing. Something can and does come from nothing. You know, that opportunity to just look at that, to look at that kind of place in my life where I had a certain way of thinking, feeling, and then to acknowledge, but it's different now. You know, it's interesting. Like, this aspect of my dynamic with one of my kids, or this aspect of my relationship with this, you know, part of my life, there's something that has moved there. How do I account for that? Like, how did I generate that? What happened? You know, and then of course, the opportunity to acknowledge that things can and do come from nothing. To me, that's what birth is. You know, there's life that comes out of a baby mommy's tummy. It's like, what? And that's about that, to me, is there's things like that in our lives that we might be overlooking. It's not, obviously, it's easy to do that. It's human to do that. But this, you know, the whole conversation that we're having, the whole understanding that we're having, is kind of pointing to the idea of where and how things are created, where and how things are generated, most importantly, our psychological experience. You know, and we get new psychological experiences. We get relief. We get new pathways. We get new senses of comfort or confidence in a certain part of our life. We get, you know, we do. Everyone does. There's not a person in the world that is not getting some kind of, whether it's like a certain persistence or resilience to keep going at something that's challenging. That's also, you know, in the face of discouragement, there was a discouraged feeling. I can't do this. And then there's a day or an hour or 10 minutes later, there's a sense of like, okay, let's try again. Well, where did that come from? You know, having that appreciation for that truth, it's a mitzvah, and it's normal that kind of making room for that awareness makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Well, when you said it comes from nothing, I suddenly realized that, number one, yes, it definitely does come from nothing. And number two, there's a tremendous opposition to that notion, at least in my mind, I find. And I also noticed that in others around me, trying to assign reasons where this gift came from in the world of form, trying to make sense, trying to say, oh, this happened because, and just to make sense of it, whereas many times I'll have like a very quiet voice, like not such a persistent voice, that sort of says, well, you're just getting lost again. Like, no, it just came out of nowhere. Just like the way what you said now. And when we begin to make sense and assign reasons to it that we think we understand, we're sort of missing the point, I think. We begin again to be sort of slaves to this illusion of a world of, you know, that has power over us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I had a very challenging relationship, and I have to say with huge gratitude that it sort of really improved over the last few months. And I constantly notice a a temptation to find and assign labels and reasons and what helped and what was the reason and why did it get better and how did I change and how did I... But when I really honestly think about it, I have no idea how it happened. And the only thing I can say is that it seems to me I started obsessing about it less. And that, again, was not my accomplishment. Again, it was a gift of less thought was being channeled through me in relation to this issue. And it was, and it's almost like my focus was moved elsewhere. And lo and behold, that's where my problems are right now. Big time. And so this area sort of, it's almost like I looked in the other direction and I left this area alone and began to flourish sort of and getting better, you know?
Mm.
Almost like I left the scab alone and it started healing by itself. And now I'm picking at a different one. I picked a new scab. And now all of my energies are there and all of my obsessions and thinkings. And so I'm just like, wow, so is it like I just should stop thinking about anything and then everything will be great?
Well,
but again, that's not up to me. I can't control it.
Well, look, you know, something that I've been speaking about the last number of weeks that I've been really touched by is the quality of ratzon, the faculty of ratzon. I don't know if you've heard me speak about it, but the faculty that we possess called wanting. Wanting is a real thing in Jewish law, in Jewish consciousness. Like the power to want, you know, we live in a world where we're living in the divine will, right? Everything is divine energy. And of course, the ability to just simply speak, to know the simple truth about that, and to kind of acknowledge the falsehood of associating it with something other than that simple source. You know, those are beautiful things to do. They're mitzvahs unto themselves, and they align a person. They align a person with the divine will, and those are choices. Believe it or not, it's a choice. You know, it's a choice to notice. It's a choice to affirm the truth of my psychological experience. It's a choice to dismiss the idea that XYZ circumstances is really causing this feeling, this psychological experience that is so precious. Now, it's important to know that we have the power of will. We've talked a little bit about this in the context of prayer. You know, that when we see clearly that something is missing in our life, we can look and we can say, I don't have understanding about how to be of help to my child. I'm not clear what to do. Or I don't know how, you know, to be of help to myself in regards to this habit, you know, that I don't want. There's something missing. There's a missing consciousness. There's missing understanding. And it is very normal and necessary for a person to express his desire for things that God wants. You know, we should want things that God wants, and that is itself it's a powerful thing to want things. Now, of course, I suggest that most people are a little bit unfamiliar with. It's like they don't notice that they have a faculty of wanting. To most folks, if they just feel an urgent feeling, it's like that's what wanting is. But that's not true. You know, having an urgent feeling about something is usually having to do with wanting to gain relief from an unpleasant feeling, which is really what every addiction is about. People who smoke, it's not that they actually enjoy the cigarette. People who shop or gamble or who, you know, look at, you know, things online that they're not supposed to. None of those things are things that directly, they're not actual authentic pleasures. They simply constitute a vehicle to rid oneself of unwanted feelings. So that's not called wanting. You know, a guy could be rushing to a meeting because he's late and he really wants to get there fast. I would not say that that's called ratzon, because he's really just feeling a yucky feeling of I'm late, and he's desperate to try and kind of end that feeling by getting quickly to his destination. That's not what we mean when we speak of ratzon. Ratzon is is I want to be with God. I want to know God. I want to understand God. Whatever it is, it's something, you know, it has to do with the will of God and acknowledging I want that will. I want to know God. Or I want, you know, let's say, what's an example that I can refer to, you know, if a person's experiencing a test and a person doesn't know how to navigate it, but at least they can affirm in that moment, God, I want to be, I want this test. I want it. I trust her. Even if he can't say authentically, I want the test, but he could say, I want the test. I think I shared last week with you about a teenager that I'm working with who has both struggles with his eating. He's overweight, and he has struggles to set himself down to do work that he knows he could and should do in his school. And he aspires to be a good student, but he has difficulty sitting down. So when I asked him, well, what do you want? He said, well, I want to lose weight. I don't want to be overweight, and I want to have the ability to sit and learn. So I was looking for, like, okay, but what's your real, like, what are you in touch with? Like, what is your real desire? You know, what sense of desire and what wanting do you really have a sense of for? Are you in touch with? So I said, do you want to be a big learner? Like, do you really want to set aside time and do a lot of learning? He's like, I really don't. So what do you want? I said, well, I want to be a learner. Oh, good. That's a good thing. Like, to just express an experience, I want to be a student of the Torah, like to really invest in learning. I want that, right? Whatever, touching that will is itself constructive. It's powerful. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, I keep speaking about this each week. Moshe Rabbeinu prayed 515 times to go into Israel. He must have understood that it wasn't an effort to change God. He must have understood that expressing his desire to live in Israel, expressing his desire to be in the kingdom of, you know, in the king's palace, was itself something that was it was changing him. It was affecting him. It was building him. Acting, expressing your desire to be with God, to find God, to know God, to serve God. All of that is a faculty of Ratzon that is inherently successful and meaningful. It changes you. And now, of course, what a lot of folks, as I'm saying, what a lot of folks get caught up in is that they're not really wanting God. They're wanting relief from an unpleasant feeling. You know, that's not called wanting. That's not called a life-changing act to want relief from a feeling. It's finding God. So when you find yourself, you know, I'm just noticing if I hear somebody speak of, like, my thinking kind of, I got less involved in thinking about something and it actually ended up bringing me to a better place, but I don't even have control over my capacity to think, acknowledging that God is doing things is so valuable. You know, he's doing things that we are not. He's driving a process. But I also have I'm kind of reconnecting to the value of our own personal will, not because our will has anything to do with changing our circumstances, not because our will is valuable for its ability to change a feeling, change a circumstance directly. Our will is powerful in that it constitutes an act of generating a connection simply by wanting. You know, I think of it you know, the metaphor that comes to my mind is the Star Trek metaphor of, like, getting beamed up. You know, the guys could leave the Star Trek ship and go onto a planet, and then when it was time to go back to the ship, so they had to stand in this beam place where they could get beamed up. So it's like when you want something, when you want God, you're really, all will is itself from God. The power that we have to want things, our free will, is itself on loan. It's a power on loan from God. It happens to be that it's consequential. When we extend in that wanting, it's as if we're standing in that, like, beam me up, Scotty beam. You know, we stand in, when we activate our will, we're standing in alignment with the will of our Creator. It changes us. It changes us. It's a power we have to exercise and experience the faculty of wanting. Right now, it's a successful action. I hope I didn't get too philosophical. I don't know if that was something that makes sense to folks. I'm curious to hear if that lands.
I'm still trying to understand, like, what does it mean that the real wanting, I mean, is to want God. It's very elusive, and I mean, recently, actually,
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. You know, if you give me an example, like the example I gave with this boy who wants to, you know, control his, he wants to lose weight, and he wants to have more discipline to learn. That's what he wants. But when I, you know, but that's not necessarily, like, he feels embarrassed to be overweight. He feels embarrassed that his friends have more discipline than him. He's a little bit in touch with, in the moment, the fact that he wants to feel normal. That's not called, a rut zone. That's not called a true will. A true will is where we find how all we're really seeking is God. You know, that's all it's really our essence. The essence of a human being is that he's seeking an experience beyond this world. Mm-hmm. It's what we want. We're wired that way. And when we find, but we get confused. You know, we get confused about what it is that we really want. So we feel the burn, that we feel the yearning, but we might think, oh, it's making money. Or we might think, oh, it's getting our lives in order and having a more, you know, less cluttered apartment. Or we might think it's having a better schedule where we don't have as many, you know, errands to run on a daily basis, where we have more efficiency. Whatever it is, like, we feel like we could get something better, something more. And understanding what is the core of that is where we have the ability. There's, like, we're looking to touch that core desire. That core desire and the truth behind that core desire. It's not really about making money. It's not. You know, it's not about getting thin inherently or getting decluttered. That's not what we're truly yearning for.
Because it's very hard in this world, because this world is made up of things.
Yes.
And Hashem is hiding really well.
And it's not like it's not a value to go and try and get things and avoid, you know, it's not like it's not a value to have money or to, you know, to have less clutter, to have a less, you know, to have a more efficient schedule. It's not like these things aren't helpful.
But
you know, when we encounter, what?
They're not the end, they're the means.
That's right. And when we find ourselves feeling stuck that we can't get them, right? I need money, but I can't get it. I need to lose weight, but I can't seem to lose the weight. I need to organize my apartment, but I can't seem to get it organized. We're not, you know, we just know, we should know that we're going to be stuck in kind of like a wrestling. We're wrestling with a feeling, you know. We're wrestling with a feeling without seeing what it is that we're truly trying to find. We think we're trying to find relief from a feeling. That's what we think. We think what we really want is relief from an unpleasant feeling. And we set ourselves the task of, like, get rid of that feeling. Oh, that getting money is going to get rid of that unpleasant feeling, or getting the apartment uncluttered, that's going to get rid of the unpleasant feeling. But it's a misunderstanding of what's going on, you know.
Because the feeling is there or is not there, regardless of those factors that we think are powerful.
Well, that's, it's a misunderstanding. It's a falsehood, right? It's a falsehood to think that my my insecure feelings, my agitated feelings are coming from the clutter.
Right.
You know, that's number one. That's number one. And number two is like, then there's the realization, okay, so if they're not coming from the clutter, then what in the world are they doing in my life? Like, what are you talking to? First of all, it's like, that's a big deal. You know, what are you talking to me about? I know why I'm upset. I'm upset because I can't lose weight. Right? So that would be a misunderstanding, and it would leave us kind of somewhat like, you know, we struggle with circumstances, we struggle with feelings, which we don't have power over, and we just engage in this kind of ongoing struggle. And one of the gifts that I see in this understanding is the ability to appreciate I have a will, I have the ability to want things that's unrelated to, like, I could be in a rotten mood, I can still want something. Like to me, you know, I've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, is this world is an answer to one basic question. This world is an answer to the simple question that God said, how can I give my children the incredible pleasure of eternal connection without it being a source of embarrassment to them? How can I give my children the incredible pleasure of eternal connection without it being a source of shame? Because if they just experience connection without having done anything to earn it, it'll constitute a tremendous source of shame for them. And the answer to that question was, oh, I will create something called Olam. Olam means in Hebrew world, but it comes from the root word of hidden. So God says, I'm going to create these beings with a soul that desires the infinite, but I'm going to place that soul inside of a body, inside of a world in which it's not immediately apparent that there's something called the infinite. It's going to look like that the world is a world that can hide the infinite. And yet I'm going to implant in their soul a desire for the infinite and give them the opportunity to distinguish between something that's fake and something that's real. I'm going to give them the quest that they can't not have. They cannot stop themselves from questing for the infinite. But I'm going to give them the opportunity to get distracted and think that their quest is going to be fulfilled in all kinds of finite ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the pain of the soul's desire for that connection is what kind of, you know, but we can't see. Right? We can't see. Like, I'm feeling pain right now. I'm in a painful relationship. I'm in a painful personal habit. That constitutes evidence for the nature of God's being. You know, that's how it looks like in a place called Olam. And it's there to give me the basis to say, okay, God, I'm going to be loyal to the truth that you're here, that you're the simple understanding, the simple basis behind everything. And I'm going to acknowledge that what I'm really after is finding you. That's the whole reason why, that's the whole answer to the question, you know, I will be in a place where I want God, but I can't find him. I can't see him. Like, it's not visible to me, but I know I want him. That truth, that clarity can be liberating because it allows me to stand in a place of pain, knowing that I know something about that pain. It's not because I, you know, it's not owing to a lack of money, a lack of, you know, an excess of weight, etc. It just gives me a context. And I have the ability to say, I want to find God. The pain I'm experiencing is simply an expression of God having hidden himself. And I want to find him. God, I'm going to find you.
Amazing.
That's why you put me here. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Can you hear me, Rabbi Harris?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear me?
I can.
Oh, did the call? I thought the call started at 11. No.
No, 10 a.m.
Oh, it's the end. Oh.
Yes, you're catching the end, but good news because it's been recorded.
Well, I just want to thank you. This is the first time that I had the chance, but it turns out I missed it. But
this whole idea of Redstone is completely amazing and really life altering and really beautiful. I just really wanted to thank you for.
Oh, it's not mine, but I'm happy that you enjoy it so much. It really is the case that it is. It's so meaningful, right? It's so meaningful to recognize that it's a tremendous success to experience a want. It's a faculty, and really, it's like a whole power that, in my opinion, we are kind of so busy looking at how we feel that we don't notice that we have this like incredible power in our possession. That is, every time we use it, it's a success.
When you say every time we use it, it's a success, do you mean every time we use it properly?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean to say when we use our, you know, when we have a recognition that, like Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea whether he was going to succeed in changing God or not, you know, or he didn't anticipate changing God. He was seeking to change himself, and every time he said, I want to live in the palace of the king, I want to be connected to the king through the special opportunity of being in the palace of the king. But whatever he was expressing, that sincere and authentic desire that knew, I'm not changing anything in this process in the world. I'm not changing. I'm not making a result through wanting. Wanting is its own success. It's its own act of self-definition. It's like going to the gym, you know. You go to the gym, a guy does 100 reps of lifting a certain weight. He doesn't, you know, he trusts that the act of lifting each time is creating strength in himself. It's doing something. The act of Ratzon is really the only power that we have. You know, it's really, we don't have power over the results of this world. We don't have power over the feelings that we possess. But we have Ratzon. If a person finds himself in a, you know, in an ongoing kind of dark mood, he can acknowledge, God, I want you, and somehow or another, you are in these moods. I don't know where, and I'm not sure how, but I want you. I want you. These moods are dark, are kind of a hidden space, and I accept that you created a place called the world, which is a hidden space. And I want you. I want you in this moment, in this space, in this feeling, I want you. That's an act of Ratzon, and it's in its success by itself. Okay, listen, I'm just noticing the time. We're a little after. I'm loving the opportunity to share and the back and forth, and I look forward, God willing, to next week. And, of course, you're welcome, as always, to be in touch with a comment or a question by email at henry@jewishwellbeing.org. And this, of course, will be uploaded shortly. Have a wonderful week and a good Shabbos, everybody.